Well, I'm delighted to be invited to share this evening, and really we just want to sort of spread the table and give a few sort of introductory thoughts to the Christianity, really, and hopefully to whet your appetite to want to return and come to the Alpha Course and to explore something of the nature and character of Jesus and of the Church. I wonder if you told your friends or your family that you were going to be coming to church this evening. And if so, I wonder what they thought. I wonder what you thought, actually, about coming here. It's an unusual thing to find oneself, not if one's a priest, but for most people to find oneself in a church. And I wonder what your friends or your family would make of you being here this evening. I suspect some might think that the very idea of attending a course to explore Christianity, the Alpha Course, is really rather bizarre. I was watching a while ago a Homer Simpson episode, and Homer Simpson decides in this episode not to go to church. And he doesn't go to church, instead he stays at home. And he dances around his bedroom in his underpants, and then he finds a penny, and he does all sorts of other things, and he decides that this is the very best day of his life. The day that he actually avoids going to church turns out to be the very best day for him. And then conversely, I was reading Robert Louis Stevenson, who recorded once in his diary, "I went to church today, and I'm not depressed. I went to church and I'm not depressed." The assumption being that if one goes to church, one is depressed. And certainly, if you went to church as a child, or you were dragged along there, or school chapels, school assemblies, sometimes just sort of being around that sort of nominal Christianity can really inoculate you from the whole thing. Then some think that Alpha would be the height of bad manners. The rules of etiquette were put together in the Victorian era, and they basically said there are three things you should never talk about in public. You shouldn't talk about money, you shouldn't talk about politics, and you certainly shouldn't talk about religion. And here in the 21st century, people are very happy to talk about money, very happy to talk about politics, but religion is still rather taboo. It's not an easy thing to open up about these profound things, certainly in a strange environment, in a strange building, with perhaps some strange-looking people at your table. I'm speaking about those who attend this church. The online magazine Elite Daily. Anyone take that? Yes, that's leadership. She goes out with my son. I'm really rather impressed. what can I say? You rather threw me then. Well, there was an article about discussing religion in public a little while ago. And the lady writing said this: "You should not talk about religion. People actually begin wars and kill one another over conflicting religious views. Why would you discuss these things in public? You could be having a conversation with someone you barely know about your religious views, and the next thing you know, they're flipping out, and they're causing all this drama. Trust me, it happened among the mothers in my neighborhood when I was young all the time." How bizarre. I can assure you that if you attend Alpha, there'll be no flipping out at the tables and no drama here. But if Christianity is true, then it's the most important truth in the world. But if it isn't true, it's the most heinous lie in the world. But one won't know whether it's true or false unless one gives oneself to exploring and probing and questioning it. And that's what the Alpha Course is here for. And then others may consider an Alpha Course just plain sinister. Is this really bait and switch? Is there something behind this free plate of pasta or whatever it was you ate. Do we ultimately want you to buy a sort of religious timeshare or something? I have a friend called Mike. He was a lawyer in the city, and he wanted to explore spirituality, and he wanted to explore Christianity, so he attended an Alpha course in London. And he told us that he refused to eat anything for 4 weeks. 4 weeks, he just sat there, no thanks, I've already eaten, and just watched other people eat. And the reason he did this, I mean, a brilliant guy, a brilliant lawyer, the reason he did this was because he was rather concerned that the food was drugged. And he said, he told us that he thought, I may well wake up clothed in orange with a different name like Zim Zum and have signed away all my money to the church. And he was genuinely rather paranoid that these Christians were going to sort of do him over. He's now a vicar, so maybe his fears did come true. What I can assure you is that if you attend this course, we won't drug you. We won't. We won't try to flog you anything. I might try to flog you some of my books, but apart from that, we won't try to flog you anything. But I can't promise that you won't become a vicar. You know, there are over 2 billion Christians in the world. 2 billion. But as we all know, statistics aren't everything. There are over 2 billion people with intestinal worms. So it doesn't, so what? But the question is, why? And what is it about Christianity and what is it about Christ that invites a third of the world to follow him, and for many of them, under threat and pain of death and great suffering? I want to suggest 3 things for you to think about this evening and to reflect upon afterwards around your table. And the first is this, that Christians believe that Jesus satisfies the human quest for identity. Satisfies the human quest for identity. When Mary Shelley's Frankenstein came to life, he asked, "Who am I and from whence did I come?" It's actually a profound book of philosophy, really. These are fundamental existential questions. Who am I and where did I come from? What am I all about? In fact, in the Turf Tavern male toilet, I remember reading that graffitied on the wall. I think they've painted it since. We want to know who we are, where we come from, where we're going, and what we're all about. The American comic Jared Kintz wrote, "I Google myself to find out what sort of a person I am." Anyone ever Googled themselves? I think more of you have, actually. This search for self-identity, I think, is seen in this rather bizarre, fairly new phenomena of the selfie. My hobby, actually, is photography, and so I find the whole selfie thing really bizarre. I took a photo a while ago of a couple who were stood taking a selfie of themselves in front of a sign for Maidenhead and Slough. I mean, really, why would you do that? 1 million selfies are taken a day and uploaded to Facebook and Pinterest and so on. 36% of people surveyed admit that they edit the photo that they've taken of themselves before they upload it. And I wonder if there isn't something in this whole selfie phenomena where people take a photo of themselves because they want to know themselves. But then they don't like what they see, and so a third of them edit themselves, as it were, out. Whatever worldview, whatever grand schematic you have of the universe, and how you choose to interpret, it must make sense, not simply of the cosmos, but of you, who you are, and where you came from, and why you exist. You and your place in this cosmos. And at the Alpha course, we will press those questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? And what am I for? Where did this universe come from? What is its purpose? And what is my purpose in this place? Of course, some say we are mere dust from a supernova, an imploded star, and that may well be true, but Is that all we are? Andrei Arkhipov, the physicist, said that we grew out of waste that was left here by aliens. I mean, respected intellectual. I mean, does that do justice to us? Does that do justice to you? More likely, we echo what Shakespeare said, I have immortal longings within me. To just define me in terms of chemistry or biology as, you know, a sort of evolved animal life that grew legs and walked out of a pond and then stood up tall and walked out of a forest. Is that enough? Does that do justice to all that is within me? The Bible says, and we'll explore this at the Alpha Course, that we are made by God, that we're made like God, and we're made for God. It's an extraordinary commentary on humanity. We're made by God, we're made like God, and we're made for God. And as the great Saint Augustine said, our hearts are restless till they find their rest in Him. A couple of weeks ago, I was listening to a Radio 4 interview with a comedian, Deborah Frances White. And in it, she was talking about her adoption and her search for her biological parents. She wanted to understand her story. Where did I come from? Who am I? She wanted to understand her identity. And later, I read an article by her following it up, and she described this journey as looking behind the curtain. Looking behind the curtain. That's what the Alpha Course is about. Looking behind the curtain, trying to understand something of ourselves in this world and the God who may have made it. And she said this, if you never look, all the wonderful things you imagine and hope for may actually exist. The big family waiting to welcome you in, and the empty seat with your name on it. And I'd like to suggest that the Alpha Course is, if you like, pulling back the curtain on God and the universe and the family that awaits you and a seat with your name on it. That's the first thing. Christians believe that Jesus satisfies the human quest for identity. Who am I and where did I come from? And what am I for? The fundamental ontological and existential questions for those who like words with several syllables. Secondly, Christians believe that Jesus satisfies the human longing for home. For home. That there is a restlessness in the human heart to be at home. One of the common symptoms of the terror that is dementia is that patients often say, I want to go home, and this is not my home. If you've ever spent time with dementia patients, often this is a repeated echo, a meme, if you like. Where does that come from? They can say that if they're in their own home with their own partner who they may have been with for 30 or 40 years. And I wonder if it doesn't just come from deep within that human soul and in an unguarded and unfiltered moment, they express what is deep within them. What I think is deep within all of us, that actually I belong somewhere else. I belong with someone else. Listen to this deeply honest comment from and disclosure from a woman called Paulina Salonen, who was a gestalt therapy, and hanging around with her would probably be a scream. But she's a blogger on spirituality, and she wrote this. Or she's not a Christian. She's spiritual, and she's searching. She said, all my life, I felt deep longing for something. Something else than this, something that always seems to be missing. I've never quite been able to put it into words, but sometimes it has felt like homesickness, even though I've been at home. I was sharing with the church at the weekend that a pal of mine used to be high up in with EMI music and so on. And he said that they had a party in London once, and on the table for the band Queen, and on the table was a fruit bowl full of cocaine, many thousands of pounds worth, just this huge fruit bowl, stacked full of powder. He said, and they were all sort of waiting around, and in comes Freddie Mercury, and he just walked in, walked over to the bowl, and he just stuffed his face into this cocaine, snorted heavily, filled his lung and his brain with the magic powder, stood up, rubbed it in his eyes, rubbed it through his hair, and then shouted out, "I'm alive!" But anyone who's ever read anything about Freddie Mercury knows that actually what a tortured and tragic, albeit genius, man he was. Here are a few lyrics from some of his well-known songs. "Who can save me, lead me to my destiny, guide me back safely to my home?" Another song by Brian May, "Save me, save me, save me, I am naked and I'm far from home." This repeated theme. A man who had everything, yet was tortured and tragic and hiding in the white powder, and inside just a little boy longing for home. Why is it that these people feel like this? Why is it so often we feel like it when we listen to ourselves and are not busy pursuing our careers and relationships and successes and life and so on, and all those good and important things? When we're really quiet and we listen to ourselves, why is it so often that we have that feeling, that kind of gnawing inside us, that we feel like a refugee, even though we've got so much? God have mercy on those who haven't. We feel exiled. We feel estranged. Why is this? Well, as we'll explore in the Alpha Course, the very first story in the Bible, those ancient scriptures of the Hebrew people trying to make sense and articulating how they understood God at work. It says that we were made by God, we were made like God, we were made for God, and we had a relationship with God. The Bible calls it Eden. It was paradise. It was a garden. And there in that picture, that primeval story, our first ancestors would meet with God. Made like God, they were given free will so that they could choose to follow him or not. And with that freedom, because love doesn't control and constrain, God loved them and therefore gave them freedom. They willed against his will, and unwilling against God's ways. And ultimately that brought a rift between him, God, and them. And ever since, there's been this gulf, this gap, this chasm, and a longing in the human heart to be back there. And if you want to understand the Judeo-Christian story, fundamentally, it's about God working his hardest to restore that relationship and to bring us back into unity. The Oxford Don, C.S. Lewis, who you'll have read, has seen the movies, got the T-shirt. He said this: "A baby feels hunger and there is food. A duckling wants to swim and there is water. A man has, and a woman has, sexual desire and there is sex. But in me I find a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy. The most probable explanation is that I am made for another." And there may have been many wonderful things, hopefully many, many, many wonderful things in your life. Wonderful and glorious adventures and experiences. But there's something that nothing in this world can satisfy, only God can. And here at the Alpha Course, we explore what that is and how we can find that. The novelist Thomas Wolfe claimed, "You cannot go home again." But the claim of Christianity is that you can, and that God in Christ Jesus has come to make a way and to make a home and to bring us home. He satisfies our longing for home. And then lastly and briefly, Christians believe that Jesus satisfies our desire to be clean. Dostoevsky and Nietzsche and others, they all worked out this moral equation that if there is no God, everything is permissible. If there is no God, then there is no absolute moral referent for life. And if we are simply the product of an accident in eternity on eternity, and there is no God, then there is no right and wrong. We can do whatever we want. And ethics and morals are simply a pragmatic social construct to order society, normally for those in power, in their favor. Well, if that's true, why do we so often feel, not because society says so, but we feel it deep within us, in our conscience, a sense of right and wrong, often a pull to things we know are wrong, and then often a guilt or a shame that comes with that. One of the 20th century's most famous psychiatrists was a man from a remarkable family called Karl Menninger. A whole family of psychiatrists, but he founded a hospital, psychiatric hospital, and wrote on this. And was an extraordinary man, but he once said that he could half empty the hospital wards of those who were suffering with psychological conditions, psychotic or neurotic. He could half of them could go home if he could simply enable them to be forgiven, because the core to their condition was guilt and shame and self-recrimination and so on. I think that's true. I remember visiting a member of my congregation when I was a priest in Bradford who repeatedly attempted suicide. Once in my presence, I had to call the ambulance. Tragic, tortured man. Tragic. I remember visiting him in hospital. He was on a section and, in a locked ward, and he was really troubled. But when I saw him, he looked different. His countenance was different. He said, "It's all right, Vicar. I've been forgiven." I thought, praise God. You know, all my wise words have got through, all my prayers have got through. He said, "There's a bloke in the room next door, and he forgave me, and he'll forgive you for the price of a packet of cigarettes." I said, "I'd like to meet this bloke," and I went and met him. And he was a really troubled man. But that troubled man, understood that many of those around him had guilt. For a packet of fags, he'd forgive them. It's not that easy, although it's easier. And if you come on the Alpha course, you'll learn the mechanism, as it were, by which God forgives us. Every religion, all the noble religions understand, they all agree on this. There is a God, and he's holy. And he made us for himself, but we're not. And we're longing to be with him. But the main religions are predicated on the notion that we must therefore make ourselves right for God, and we do that by our good works, balancing the scales of justice. We do that by our investment in goodness and building up karma so that we can be liberated from the meaninglessness of this existence. Also, but it's based on what we do, putting it in. God in his grace invites that, but we've got to do something. Here is where Christianity differs from those noble religions. Like them, it recognizes there is a God, recognizes that he's holy, recognizes that we're not, but it says we can't do anything, that our best efforts isn't good enough. So God comes and does it. Only man should pay for what he's done wrong. Only God could. And so at the heart of Christianity, God becomes a man and he comes to deal with it, ultimately by dying at the cross. That is a mystery and a marvel, and we'll be exploring that in the course. There's a desire to be clean. We all build a long history of regret. When I tell people I'm a priest, some people laugh, some people walk away, but some people, they're really intrigued. I remember talking to a graduate student, brilliant graduate student from abroad. I mean, all graduate students are brilliant, but this is a very brilliant one. I said, he said, what do you do? I'm a priest. He said, do you take confessions? That was what was near. Do you take a confession? I said, well, I can do, you know. But not here, in the coffee shop, you know. A student wanted to come and confess that his grandfather had been a Nazi. They would have been involved in all sorts of wicked things. People want to confess. As a priest, I've several times been called to people who are dying. They've lived all their life without God, but death has a way of fronting you with ultimate reality, and they want to get things right. They want to confess to the priest. The amazing claim of Christianity is that it doesn't negate what we've done wrong, but it says that isn't going to be the mark of our life, and that God will act to deal with it and to make us clean. I need to finish. The ferocious Jeremy Paxman, in a recent interview, said that he was no longer interested in catching out politicians. I read this last week. Not interested in catching out politicians, he said. I'm more interested in the bigger questions. The bigger questions. And what were those bigger questions? He told us. Is there a purpose? What do things mean? And what is the right way to live? Is there a purpose? What does it all mean? Is there a way that I should live? And Paxman said, I would rather spend an evening talking about those things than about Vladimir Putin or reforming the NHS. Well, that's what the Alpha Course is all about. Not talking about Vladimir Putin or the NHS, although those things do matter. But the ultimate questions, is there a purpose? What do things mean? And what is the right way to live? Some people will think that coming to Alpha is just bizarre, and that by not going, you might have the best day of your life, like Homer Simpson. Some people will think that attending Alpha is simply bad manners, because who would want to talk about such personal matters in public? And some people would worry that coming to Alpha was sinister, and that it was a cult, and strange things might end up happening to you. But they'd all be wrong. What Alpha is all about is about understanding Christianity, a Christianity that says that you can find your way home with Jesus, that you can find out who you are through Jesus, and that you can find absolute forgiveness and cleansing through Jesus.